your favorite cartoon characters will help you understand how drugs and alcohol can ruin your life. So watch the program. Talk about it with your family.
Make the right
special presentation with Mike and Ethan. Or
Alf will not be seen tonight.
Okay, Mike, in the early 90s, what were the two most popular comics that you can think of?
The early 90s, let's see, Spawn.
Mm-hmm.
And Sandman?
Spawn and Sandman. Oh, that's an interesting choice. But okay, so now what would happen if your boss told you, "Hey, let's put those two together. Make a comic called Sandspawn."
yeah, I was like, "Oh, that's my favorite Pokemon."
Actually, it's one of my favorites too. But that's basically that little bit of wordplay is how we got what we're looking at today. Some brilliant manga creator looked at the two most popular manga at the time, which were Dragon Ball and Ranma Half, mm-hmm. put them together, and got Dragon Half.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. This is way better than either of those things, though.
Yeah, I think so, too. Dragon Half is a lot of fun, and it's a crime that there's just these two episodes.
I was super surprised to find out that it's only two episodes.
There's a lot of controversy over what really happened, but you know, the official word that they give on Wikipedia that it was simply canceled for lack of interest. But that's not all that happened. Somebody, I couldn't tell you who, like, went to prison on drug charges.
Well, oh, geez. Okay. this was a money laundering operation, apparently?
Or something like that. Yeah, there is. So the whole Dragon Half franchise began and ended with two direct-to-video shows when they had planned a whole bunch, but they had to kind of hilariously cut the whole story short.
Wow. Okay. That is interesting. So apparently there's this was the early 90s. So I guess, mm-hmm. you know, there was probably some cocaine running going on or something.
Yeah. And Japan is much harder on its drug offenders than we are, which is, you know, think about how bad we are to our drug offenders. And now,
oh, geez. So I guess that's why they put the kibosh on Dragon Half.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm not quite sure. I think that there was drugs involved. There was drugs or there was the Yakuza involved. They tend not to get involved with one another.
Really?
But, yeah. Huh. Yeah, Yakuza don't get involved with drugs because drugs will get you sent up the river.
So what crimes do the Yakuza do if not drugs?
I think largely prostitution and one thing I know they do is that they keep tabs on who is descended from Burakumin.
What's that?
Do you know what an untouchable is?
Oh yeah, they have those in Japan too.
Yeah, they did. The Burakumin were the Japanese untouchable caste that have been generally part of the greater population for decades now, but some people just won't let go of a grudge, and that is why the Yakuza keeps an eye on who has Burakumin in their ancestry and will sell books of who in your neighborhood is Burakumin so you can keep your daughter from marrying her.
Oh, that's kind of fucked up, actually.
It's really
fucked up. Because I was going to say that, like, oh, prostitution, well, you know, I mean, I, that's bad when you know there's like gangsters involved, but like, it shouldn't, but you know, but sex work is work and it should be legal, then you wouldn't have crime about that. Mm-hmm. But you know, doing racism, well, that's a whole different story. That's I was about to say, these guys, because I was like, wow, the life of Yakuza, it's kind of, you know, there's a mystique and a charm to it, like, you know, like the Godfather. But now finding out they enforce these social hierarchy, stratification, I can't get behind them. I can't endorse that. I think, you know what, I think that the Yakuza should reassess their priorities, you know?
And they seem to be, actually. The Yakuza are a less and less of a going concern because of basically the equivalent of American street gangs trying to muscle them out of the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
USA! USA! Man, well, that's interesting. I did not know about that. So apparently the Yakuza, well, but it sounds like when they're not doing prostitution or racism, they are doing Dragon Half.
Yeah. So Dragon Half got its start in a magazine called Dragon Magazine, appropriately enough.
Yeah, that makes sense.
However, yes, Dragon Magazine is not just a manga collection. It is also a fiction publication. So this is sort of like if your comic first got published in, like, I don't know, Cricket Magazine or something.
Huh.
So, yeah. So it's not just manga, although there is a large assortment of manga, and many popular light novels, which have later been animated, were originally serialized in Dragon Magazine.
Oh,
and okay. Yeah, it first got started in 1988, and Dragon Half was the first comic to run in it.
Hmm. Okay. Did they pick it? And it's appropriate because, you know, the name.
Yep, it is. It's absolutely appropriate, and the manga ran for 7 years, but which is why it's so weird that there's just the two episodes.
Man. So before we watch this, I was aware of the title. And I believe mm-hmm. I watched this probably about 10, 15 years ago. I have a friend who's big into the anime, and she showed it to mm-hmm. me. But I had completely forgotten everything about it, other than the title and that there was, like, a girl, like, you know, redheaded girl in, like, a chainmail bikini who had a tail. I remember that much, but, like, everything else was, like, completely new. So watching it now mm-hmm. was kind of an experience. Because I thought watching, like, oh, of course it'll come back to me as I watch it. And I was like, no, this is all completely new. I don't remember a whit of this. But anyway, sorry.
Yeah, Dragon Half is built around the conventions of RPGs and sword and sorcery tropes. You know, it's very tongue-in-cheek and very self-aware, and it feels like, you know, if there had been an anime version of Tiny Toon Adventures, this would be a good start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was funny, because I knew it was sort of a comedy. I remembered that. I wasn't really prepared for, like, yeah, this is very much in that, it very much felt like a product of the early 90s, you know, where it's like kids want something that's a little hip, that's a little self-deprecating, that kind of is aware of its own limitations as an art, as a medium. And something like Tiny Toon Adventures or the Garfield and Friends show, you know, you know, they didn't go super off the rails, but, like, if you're a kid watching it, you'd be like, this is intelligent comedy for me, the intelligent child.
Yeah. Dragon Half has, you know, it has a lot of that because obviously it was written specifically for that audience initially. And so we have our main character, Mink, who is indeed half dragon. Now, the word half is actually kind of politicized in Japan because it means, because if you're like a Nippon half, that means that you're only half Japanese, and some people won't want anything to do with you.
Man, talk about what a racist culture. I'm glad we don't. Yeah. I'm glad we don't have a problem like that here in America.
Yeah, good thing we got rid of racism. Thanks, Sojourner Truth.
Yeah, I mean, hey, we don't have racism anymore. That's why the Supreme Court said, yeah, we don't need to do any of the stuff that stops racism. We're fine. It's all good.
Yep, let her rip.
Yep. Things are going great here in America. Anyway, yeah. But
there's a deeper connection to gaming culture. If you dip a little deeper into this, there are Mink's best friends in this story are an elf named Lufa and a halfling named Pia, and Pia's parents, who we meet in the manga but don't appear in this, are Mario and Princess Peach.
Oh, are they?
Yes. And Lufa's single father is Link.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, the vibe of this show was very, it was interesting to watch because it felt like you said, it's kind of like goofing on fantasy, but very specifically feels like it's goofing on kind of high fantasy Dungeons and Dragons and more so like JRPGs.
Yeah. Specifically JRPGs, because, you know, there are some extremely Japanese things in this, like the fact that they live out in the country in a beautiful bucolic village with, you know, lots of tiers for you to get lost in and stuff like that. But they live just outside of a big modern city.
Oh, yeah.
And
with airplanes and stuff.
Yes, and they have to take a train to get there. So it's interesting that fantasy people are kind of like a subculture.
Now, I haven't played a whole lot of JRPGs, but I feel like I've seen that in a lot of the ones that I've seen clips of, where it's kind of it's less like American fantasy is like medieval. It's medieval, mm-hmm. basically. Tech level is basically clock punk, but the Japanese ones seem to be a big mix where it's kind of like, I don't know how you would describe it. It seems the technology level varies depending on where you are, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. You know what we do? Not an American thing that has that going on? He-Man.
Yeah, that's true. That is a very He-Man thing. Though with He-Man, it's specifically because they did not give... He-Man's interesting because it's very obvious they just did not give a shit about anything. And they were just like, yeah, every episode... Does he need to be in a plane? Okay, planes exist now. Does he need a laser? Lasers exist now. Does he need magic? Magic exists now. But even though that is obviously just done because nobody cared, it actually does give He-Man an extremely interesting vibe. You know, it's,
yeah.
I mean, what would you, I don't even know how you would describe the world of He-Man, the Eternia.
I've heard people call it magic and machine.
Okay. I mean, it kind of is. It's, it feels like, you know, it feels like, what is that thing?
Urban fantasy?
Not urban fantasy. Punk? I guess elf punk would be the best. Yeah, elf punk maybe is the thing. I was gonna say it feels like that other cartoon where it's like, I forget the name of it now, but it's like there's an apocalypse and it's like, oh, in the far future after the apocalypse, magic rises and returns to the world. So it's like
Thundar?
That's it, yes. You know, where they're like they're wizards and stuff, but they're all like wandering through like ruined cities.
Yeah.
So,
my favorite thing about Thundar is that his best friend is this Chewbacca-like creature named Ookla the Mock.
Oh, yeah.
And eventually we discover that the name Ookla comes from UCLA.
Well, yeah, that's right. That's, I guess the animators went there, so.
Yeah.
They're like, UCLA, fight, fight, fight.
What do you see when the smog clears in Los Angeles? UCLA!
Wah, wah, wah. Hey, that's a good one, actually. I'm curious because, like, I've seen, like, there's a lot... I've seen other Japanese productions. Which kind of also play with this with the technology level to some degree. And mm-hmm. it feels like this is a... This is much more of a Japanese thing than an American, because I feel like in America we're like, okay, we have rules. We're not going to break these rules. But I remember watching some like Japanese like samurai movie or something where it's just a normal uh-huh. samurai movie, and then in the last reel, some guy pulls out a gun, and it's like, oh, okay, I guess.
Oh, I've seen that movie. Yeah, Ralph Bakshi's Wizards.
Actually, well, Wizards is another one kind of in the genre, isn't it? Because it is, machine. So
it's explicitly post-apocalyptic, but that doesn't cut that. Oh, Adventure Time. That's a big example.
Yeah, there you go. So so Dragon Half is in very illustrious company. Although this is it's very much played much more for like laughs in this one than in many of the other ones.
Yeah, I would say that Dragon Half kind of has the same rules about technology that Roger Rabbit does about getting out of the handcuffs. You know,
yeah.
Not at any time, but only when it would be funny.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's a good way to put it. This is a comedy series. And
yes,
it's
really funny.
Yeah. I was actually surprised at how amusing it was, because I'm not a huge anime fan. You know, to be honest, I feel like this stuff is kind of for nerds. You know, whenever I watch anime, I'm all like, well, maybe some nerd would like this. But as a cool dude, I just doesn't gel with me.
I mean, this one is explicitly for nerds.
Yeah, but this one is,
you liked it.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was fun. I'll be honest, like, I feel like I would not have appreciated it as much when I saw it for the first time, like 15 years ago, because this is from what, 1993, I think, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And it feels like 1993. I don't know how to describe it, but it is a pitch perfect parody of a 1993 anime, probably because it was made in 1993, so they knew what they were goofing on. But, you know, every aspect of it, just the look, you know, the constant super deformed, you know,
yeah, this one does more of the super deformed TV style than anywhere else. And sometimes even in the same shot, there's one image where, Mink looks very serious. And then without anyone else changing, she suddenly takes her super deformed mode and is like, no way, that's a poisoned apple.
I mean, it works really well though, because I've seen a lot of things that use super deformed, and you know, it's usually, I've never seen it deployed so well for comedy purposes, though, because they really juxtapose the serious and the chibi in ways that, like, you know, they play. It seems like they're scenes that are very serious, and then they'll immediately undermine it with a character going chibi, and it works really well. So I like, especially with that king guy has some great ones.
He's great. He is one of the best things about this. Actually, well, they're all great, but yeah, the king is hilarious. And I think one thing that really helps is that the drawings are just plain funny. It's almost got a little bit of a Ren and Stimpy vibe, but not Ren and Stimpy's style, just the specific vibe of, you know, make your funny drawings move funny.
It does the same. It's similar in the same way that I think Ren and Stimpy would do that thing where they would have things that are hyper realistic and then go hyper cartoony. And in this one, there are bits where it'll like have like, you know, like a static shot of like Mink like lying there crying or something, and it looks very dramatic. And then suddenly it'll cut to like chibi stuff dancing around. And you know, it works really well. I mean, especially there was one bit where like when the king who is. He's mad at he wants to kill Mink for
the plot is pretty good, isn't it? Yeah, let's get into the actual plot. Yeah, so we start with meeting Mink, who is your average teenage girl who is super into this guy named Dick Saucer, who is a combination idol singer and hero. Who defeats monsters and then sings songs about defeating monsters.
So does that... Okay, I have to ask. These names. I assume they're not the same names in Japanese. Do these mean anything? Like, Dick Saucer sounds like it should be a spoof of something.
I don't know, but that is his Japanese name, Dick Saucer.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah.
I do like
Diku Sosa.
I like how all his songs are him just saying saucer over and over.
Yeah.
It reminds me
He always starts with saucer.
It reminds me of when Jack Chick did the anti-rock and roll pamphlet, and he has the band singing, "We're gonna rock, 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 rock with the rock," because it's like, well, apparently you just say the name of the genre over and over again, and Dick Saucer's like, "I'm just gonna say my name."
Rap. Damn, his science just too tight.
So, Dick Saucer, he's got that very Bishonen 90s look. And
oh, yeah, he has got the super puffy bangs.
Yeah.
I covet those bangs.
I mean, I think they even, when they show him half the time, they just do that thing where he's standing in front of, like just flowers and stuff. So, you know, it really he's Bishonen. This was a thing back then, you know?
It was.
Yeah. But he is, so Mink wants to get with him, and
She at least wants to go to his concert, and we see her parents fighting in the background while she's watching, which is pretty funny because her dad is a dragon slayer and her mom is a big red dragon.
Yeah, yes. That's why she is half dragon.
Yes. I am more familiar with the Japanese dub of this, so some of these jokes don't resonate with me as much as well as they did in, you know, hearing a different tone to the voices. Mm. And it's interesting to me that they gave Mom an old smoker's voice. I mean, it makes sense because she's a dragon.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But she had a much sweeter, mature lady's voice in the Japanese version.
Yeah. The parents are kind of a typical anime parents couple. The dad is a pervert, and the mom likes beating him up. You know, that happens a lot in these animes, I feel like.
Yeah.
But it's basically, I think what happened is the king sent the dad to slay the dragon, but instead he married her. And
yes. And now he's like, I'm going to destroy that traitorous knight, and his beautiful wife will be mine.
That was one of the best jokes in this whole thing, I think. The king, we find out the king just wants to, he doesn't want to kill the dragon, he wants to marry the dragon as well.
Yes.
I feel like I will criticize this series on one thing, though. And that is the fact that the mother, the red dragon, she can transform and have a human form as well. Which I think is not nearly as funny as if she was just a dragon the whole time and everyone was just like sexually obsessed with this dragon.
Well, you do see the one shot of him taking the dragon with him as they run through a field of flowers and the dragon is like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I just feel like it's like the fact that she can turn into a hot lady kind of like defeats the joke a little bit, you know? But I mean, it's minor complaint. Because it's very funny. There's lots of little chicken fat gags in this that really you know that they don't linger on, but are like fun little things. Like when the king's wizard first shows up and he's got a bucket of dry ice just behind him, so he can do the dramatic entrance. He's actually another great character. I do like that wizard because.
Rosario. He gets a name. I forget what the actual king's name is.
I don't know.
They never say his name in the anime, but he gets named in the manga. But
the king is great because he is a classic bumbler, as we used to say on a previous podcast I was on when we got obsessed with kings and cartoons. You know, you want a real bumbling king. In something like this, but he doesn't look like a bumbling king. Like he looks
like Uncle Fester with a Satan tattoo on his forehead.
Yeah, like he actually, like when you first see him, he's actually pretty threatening because they draw him all serious and he just looks like, oh, this is the evil king. This king is gonna fuck shit up. He's bad news. And then they start doing chibi stuff and he's like, I just want to be with that beautiful dragon. So that's pretty good.
And anytime somebody says anything to annoy him, he drops a giant stone block on him on them, which says, "Ye King's anger."
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, a lot of these, you know, like a lot of comedy anime, like, many of the jokes are just people hitting each other while making noises. But
yes,
this one I think works better than most because there are actual jokes between just the beatings. And
yes,
and like I said, this captures the vibe of 1993 so much that it is like comfort food when I watch it. It's like, you know, because it's like watching Samurai Pizza Cats, you know.
Yeah, I'm back in the Clinton years.
Oh, man.
The 10-year sleep.
Oh, isn't it so quaint now?
Yeah. There are some, actually, you know, I just complained about the English voices, but there are some things that I like a lot better in the English dub. There's one specific scene where, for just a second, you know, the king says, "What, you think I should marry the daughter instead? You're sick!" And Rosario, the wizard, as he's correcting him, he starts shining his head for just a few seconds.
Oh, yeah.
And in the Japanese version, he just says something like, "No, silly!" But but they made a little song out of it. And this one, he goes, "Oh, what a lovely and shiny head!"
Like, I do think it's very funny. It was like, "Oh, marry the daughter. This isn't the lolly anime." The world's only non-lolly anime.
Yeah. Till the last second of the last one, but yeah.
But yeah, so they have so let's see. So basically there's like, I guess the plot is just there's various schemes to try and get Mink, because the king wants to marry her mom, but also the king has a daughter. The king has a sexy evil daughter, who's also a slime, it turns out.
Yes, she's a slime half, and we get this adorable scene with the slimes of Slimeville, and one of them saying, I've vowed to marry the king. And they're like, "That's ridiculous. A human would never marry a slime." "Well, he doesn't look human to me." Well, you're right, he does kind of resemble us.
But she gets the people potion, which makes her...
Yeah, the people potion.
Yeah, so that makes her into a people. And but unfortunately, when she consummates the relationship with the king, the baby is a slime. Is an adorable slime. Now, slimes... I guess I should ask, are slimes a feature of Japanese art, like, well, I was gonna say Japanese RPGs, JRPGs.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Because I know they are in, like, Dungeons & Dragons. You get, like, gelatinous cubes and shit all the time, but these seem a little different.
Yeah, these slimes are very influenced by the Dragon Quest series, where slimes are such a the slimes that you would fight in the first one became such a meme that now they're kind of the mascots for the whole series, and they're literally just a drop of goo with a smiley face. So that was where they're going with these slimes. These don't seem like the kind of slime that, you know, absorb people and dissolve them like the Blob or anything.
Right. Because when I looked at these and I was like, "Oh, it's unicorn jelly," but
yeah, that is, if you're wondering where unicorn jelly came from, this is what they're referring to.
Oh man. I'm learning all sorts of things tonight.
Yeah. And if you don't know about unicorn jelly, oh, have fun diving down that rabbit hole tonight.
Yeah, that's an adventure.
Yes.
Now,
it isn't evil. It isn't good. It's an adventure.
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's outsider art, you know, it's fascinating. I say that a lot, like a Mr. Spock. Mm-hmm.
Fascinating.
So, what's her name? Venus, I think, is the daughter's
Vena,
name?
Yeah. Venus is the mother. Vena is the daughter.
Right.
And we're told that Vena died of shock, but later in the manga we found out she's still alive. She was just banished for giving birth to a slime.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not quite... Okay, well, that's good. So Vena is kind of what you'd expect. She's a very typical, like, evil, sexy daughter. for
I mean, she's basically Veronica, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I like that she is, because in addition to being an evil princess, she's also a black sorceress, you know.
Yeah.
She devoted herself to studying the dark arts so that she could... basically, I think she just does this... has a glamour that makes her appear human. Is that what this is?
Yeah, she can turn herself into a human temporarily, but if she gets shocked too much, like, say, if somebody drops Yi King's anger on her, she reverts to slime form.
So that's interesting, because I guess slime is the dominant gene, because she's a slime half, but her natural form is just slime, whereas Mink is dragon half, but her natural form is human with wings and tail, and horns, I guess. Yes. So...
This is an interesting thing that was that they didn't get to explore in the cartoon because it was so abruptly ended. But as the comic continued, Mink sheds her skin regularly and she becomes more and more dragon-like.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. I'm kind of sad that they didn't put that in.
Yes. When she sheds her skin the first time, she becomes much stronger and gets 6 horns instead of 2. But we're told that after her second skin shedding, a monster of impossible strength and power would appear. And it does, but it's just a birthmark on her butt.
Yeah, this is they like taking the piss in this one.
Yeah, they do.
So Vera is basically, I guess she's also kind of obsessed with Dick Saucer. So they're kind of, that's why they're feuding, I think, because they both want Dick Saucer.
Yeah. And so after an attempt by Rosario to capture Mink by using a fake Dick Saucer ticket to lure her to their lair, she gets away with the ticket and runs to redeem it, and then it turns out it's a fake because it has a big word "fake" on the back.
Yeah, that was a really good little bit there. That was hilarious. they forge a Dick Saucer ticket, but they write "fake" on it, you know, like for,
and she didn't see it
for entertainment purposes only. So yeah, but they say that she can fight in some fighting tournament and then get money to actually buy a real ticket. No,
yeah,
That's the second one.
Yeah, that happens in the second one. In the first one, we have two other. We see a new villain is introduced. This is Damaramu. He is, I guess, another knight along the same lines as Mink's father, but he is blissfully stupid.
This guy rules. he is a lot of fun. He's kind of a himbo. He just like talks about himself in third person. Very
he constantly says, "I will always regret this."
Yes. When he returns in the second one, that was a really great bit.
Because
he gets stabbed through the head and apparently killed in the first episode, and he returns in the second one, and they're all like, "How are you alive? We saw you get like stabbed through the head." And he's like, "Well, my brain is so amazingly compact that it's just that the sword actually missed it." So that was good. The first one, Damaramu attacks and fails to kill them. I think Dick Saucer tries to again.
Yeah. Yeah. This time the king calls Dick Saucer himself and says, "I have a dragon for you to destroy." And he shows him the picture of Mink, and he actually happened to run into Mink when she was trying to redeem the fake ticket. So he's like, "Wait, I've seen this girl before. This isn't a dragon." So the king is like, "Well, she looks like a pretty girl, but she's actually a big mean dragon. You better go kill her." And he's, you know, miming. Again, these are really good, funny drawings here, which is something you kind of don't see a lot in anime. Or at least you definitely don't see it anymore now that it's all CGI made to look like cell drawings.
Oh, yeah. Everything is just... Nowadays, the anime, they just don't make it like they used to, you know?
Well, I mean, and when they didn't make it like they used to... then, because, you know, I remember some 10 years after I saw this, I got into watching old 60s episodes of Astro Boy. They were running on Adult Swim. Mm-hmm. And after every one, I was just like, oh my God, they packed so much into one episode. Each one felt like it was an hour, but it was short enough for them to show in a half hour with commercials.
Yeah, see, that's the way it used to back in the 60s, you know. Because I remember when we watched Speed Racer. And like,
yeah,
and it's just like every episode is like, well, it's great. Speed Racer is great because it was just like in Japan, they're like, man, America, they have all these amazing cars. Aren't cars incredible? Oh, they're so cool. And just the love for cars is just, it's like the Fast and the Furious or something, you know? Speed Racer, just like every episode is like, what if there's like a million cars and they all like drove like into each other at the same time? And you're just the whole time like kind of losing your mind because there's so many cars driving on the screen. You know, do you remember or the best Speed Racer episode where he has to fight the colossal car? You ever see this one?
He has to fight a big car? No, I haven't seen this one.
Oh, this car, it's an amazing car. It's like Speed Racer, he's racing and there's a car. It's so big that it's multiple cars like together. It's literally a train. It is a train. Speed Racer is racing against the train and everyone in Japan is like, "Look at that car is so big. It's amazing that it's just so big." And it's funny cuz it's you looking at it and it's just like that's a train. And generally, I'm sorry, but if you're in a car and you're racing against a train, I feel like a car has some advantages in that race that it would not actually be that much of, you know, that tight. Because, you know, if you're on a mountain pass and you're like, I got to do all these hairpin turns, can I do them better than a train? The answer is going to be yes, you can usually do that better than a train. But anyway, Speed Racer. Compare that to Evangelion, where they have entire episodes where nobody does anything. Anyway, that's why I'm once again putting out there, Evangelion sucks. Speed Racer rules.
Yeah, so I first watched Dragon Half at an anime club meeting. It wasn't for school or anything. It was just an anime fan club that met once a week at the mall. And I watched this the same week that I saw Evangelion. So you can see how the joy of Dragon Half stuck with me and Evangelion did not.
Yeah. It was just like, oh, yeah, because this show is good. This show rules.
There should have been... You should have been more episodes of this and fewer, and two episodes of Evangelion.
Yeah, look, I'm sorry. I know that someone's going to get mad at us for this, but I think you could do the entire series of Evangelion in two episodes. It's just like you do it. It's basically like, okay, look, there's these three kids. There's the sad boy. There's the sad egg. There's the mean German girl, and then there's the girl that every creepy guy that wants to fuck, and they have to pilot a robot, and if they don't pilot the robot, then someone else is going to have to do it again. Oh, also the robots are angels because Christ imagery, blah, 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 whatever. I do like that Evangelion puts all this Christ imagery in there because they were like, it looks cool.
Yeah. They don't know anything about Christianity. Just like, well, whatever. What? They treat Christianity the way we treat pretty much everything else, and we have, you know, Zeus fighting Thor over with Towaret watching and ready to bed the winner.
I mean, that's kind of amazing. I love it. It's like, remember when you know the Altered Beast?
Yeah.
I love when the meta story is like you're a righteous pagan Roman soldier. You have to save Zeus's daughter from an evil Christian sorcerer. It's so great. Yeah. They don't have enough Christian sorcerers and stuff, you know? I mean, it used to be like a thing. It used to be like a legitimate job, you know? Like in days...
I guess you could argue that the king and Rosario probably are, since he's got like a Satan logo on his head.
I mean, I think they got it wrong. It's got 6 points, so it's actually they're Jewish.
Oh, so they're Kabbalists.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, damn. Actually, that adds another layer to this.
It does.
But yeah, so Evangelion, whatever. I'm sure that it's very popular with the nerds, and the nerds going to be like, no, you don't understand. Actually, no. Shut up. I don't care.
I mean, yeah, I never got to watch in English, so I don't know. All I know is that there was one episode where the girl had to wear an inflated suit, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I remember that, because Misato was all like, join in next time when Asuka's going to wear the inflato suit, and I was like, oh, really? Let me see this. And I'm like, and then they show it, and it's like, eh. It's not even,
yeah.
I'm sorry, they did it better in Totally Spies.
Yeah, yeah.
Apparently the French are just bigger perverts. I'm sorry. It just, yeah, that's another thing. I'm sorry. Let me just say this. Have I complained about Japanese porn? Let me say this about Japanese porn. Because everybody on the internet's like, oh, I love this hentai. It's so sexy, all this hentai. Every hentai is one fetish. They only have one fetish in hentai. Unacceptable. Because, like, the French are like, look, every episode of this cartoon show, we're going to put a different fetish in here. So there's something for everyone. But every time I watch, like, every hentai is like, oh, you like, I don't know, you like feet? Well, we'll do two panels of feet, and then it'll be rape. It'll just be rape. It's like, does it have to have the rape? I mean, do you have to have the rape? Could you do a night? Could you do a sex comic without the rape? Because I'm not into the rape.
No.
There, I know. I'm sorry, Japan. I don't know what's up with that. I mean,
no, but no. The sexy part is not the sex. It's the broken doll eyes afterward.
I think that I think personally, violence against women is wrong. Yeah, I may be stepping on some toes there, but I don't care. I'm going to take this bold stand. So a lot of hentai.
Can you imagine how much booing you'd get if you said that at CPAC?
Oh yeah, they'd be like, the big old hook would come and pull me off the stage.
Yeah, like, sorry, we didn't know we had a wokist here.
Yeah, it's like boo learns, but. So anyway, that's why I'm not particularly impressed whenever people keep posting like anime style, like, you know, sex erotica or stuff. And it's always like, yeah, I know it's just going to be rape in three panels. So I'm not. Yeah. But the French took the anime form and perfected it with Totally Spies. Anyway, yes. So there we go. That's my thesis now. However, since Dragon Half is not a sex anime, even though it does have like a lot of sexy bikini characters in it.
This is not hentai. This is what the limited form of hentai they call ecchi. It's just a little bit of a tease. Just a little too adult for a 10-year-old, but not for a 16-year-old.
Yeah. I think, actually, yeah, there is a little bit of nudity, I think. In the very end, we get to see,
just
like,
a tiny
mixed
bit,
boobs.
Yeah.
But, other than that, like, it's a lot of character. There is some skin, because everyone's wearing these kind of, these kind of fantasy anime outfits, I guess?
Yeah.
I don't know what you would call them. They're not quite, like, bikini chainmail armor. They're always kind of a little like they almost have a cyberpunk quality to them. And they're always extremely impractical and have like way too many moving parts, you know. But this is something for like there's something in this for the dads, you know.
We have Mink and Vina and Lufa, who are always walking around in these outfits. And then there's Pia, who I think might be a little younger than the others, and she's more fully dressed.
Yeah. I got the impression she was supposed to be younger. She's got a cat, yes. I think, or a mouse.
Oh, Mappy. Mappy is like a mouse, a weird sort of fairy mouse that can turn into a giant berserker form. And do you know where the name Mappy comes from? It's a little obscure.
No, I don't.
Mappy is a video game character from the same people who brought us Pac-Man, from Namco. Mappy was a mouse policeman who was chasing after a gang of cats called the Mewkies. And this was a huge hit in Japan that barely charted here. So you're going to see a lot of Japanese references to Mappy that they just don't really show up here.
Huh. Okay. That's interesting. I guess kind of like the Zelda and the Mario references in this. Yeah. So,
one thing that's funny about Mappy is that in the credits it says Mappy himself.
Well, you know, a big star like Mappy. That was a real get to get him in this.
Yeah, I can't believe they got Mappy. Shoot. You know, I heard this film was taken away from Takashi Suzuka and re-edited by Mappy himself.
Is that true?
No.
Oh. They took it away because of the cocaine charges.
Yeah. Yeah, and Mappy was like, all right, and he, you know, cracks his knuckles and turns into the giant form and starts typing away.
Mappy was actually the one who did the drug bust that ended the Dragon Half.
Damn it. Oh, he was...
ACAB.
He was too good at his own job. Yeah, for real.
Anyway, so... let's see what else happens in this.
After they defeat Damaramu and eat his giant flying bird,
yeah,
there's a scene where Mink is like, you know, I just had this feeling that something great is going to happen to me, and we fade out on Mink is a lousy fortune teller.
Yeah, this is this series is not subtle.
No,
but
all you have to do is look at the end credits for that. What do you think of this song?
Is it singing about food?
Yeah, it's this song about an omelet, but to the tune of something by Beethoven.
Why not? I mean, you know, this is obvious. Everyone's having fun.
Yes. And we get some images of the characters from the manga that don't actually show up in the cartoon and over the ending credits, so that's nice. In fact, you get to see Damaramu's final form when he's literally just a head on little stick legs.
Oh, did that happen to him in the manga?
Yeah, it does in the manga.
I'm gonna guess then that Damaramu is one of those characters that keeps getting increasingly like.
More and more injured. Yes,
he's like a rickety cricket type guy.
Mm-hmm.
But
and he keeps showing up, and Mink continuously transforms, and also they eventually do have the chance to they do get the people potion, but by that time Mink and Dick Saucer are already in love, so she doesn't need it. So she gives it to Lufa, who has been transformed into a slime, to turn her into a human. Which pisses Lufa off, because she was an elf!
Oh, God. So there's a lot they never got to do in this, unfortunately.
Yeah, there was a whole bunch of story left to tell of the Dragon Half. So if... You know, this has always been one that if I had my druthers, I'd rather have my druthers to get a whole new Dragon Half series going.
Yeah, this one is a lot of fun, you know? Like, the plot is not really super important. It's just basically like, look, the gags, yeah. You know?
Let's be very silly. And some of the gags, you know... Yeah, we can't go too deep into the story here because so much of it is just being funny.
Yeah, but you know, it's good that it does it well, you know, because this is the sort of comedy that I feel like it's easy to do it badly because it's like, oh, we're going to be random, and it's like, well, that can get old real fast. Mm-hmm. But this one does a real good job of. I think really just like the animation like does so much heavy lifting in this, you know.
It really does. I mean, you don't see a lot of anime where the actual visuals are so funny.
Yeah.
You know, this is not illustrated radio. This is not The Simpsons.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. Because The Simpsons is definitely a lot more the jokes are written. You know,
yes.
And I guess they've kind of set the template for like, animated comedy in America is kind of the Simpsons. Because everyone is now like the characters kind of stand around and talk at each other. I think people make fun
you watch of... the first season of The Simpsons when they were being animated by Klasky Csupo, and it's a lot more, you know, out of the animation is just flying around all over the place, and you have characters, you know, their tongues wagging out of their mouths as they talk, and Bart doing that thing where his head splits in the middle and his lips go one way and his nose goes the other.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, if you look at the the Babysitter Bandit episode, which is not a particularly good episode, but some of the animation in that is, like, it's weird seeing The Simpsons move so much, especially now.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, like, it's weird because, like, if you compare, like, first season Simpsons to, like, you know, Golden Age, you know, Simpsons, season 10 or something, 9 or 10, like, you can see that, yeah, the animation's been toned down a lot. And then you compare season 10 to today, and today it's like, oh, I'm looking at a Flash cartoon, aren't I?
Yeah, pretty much.
Though I guess they don't use Flash anymore. I don't think Flash is a thing.
No, I think it's actually all CGI models rendered as cells now.
God. Yeah, they're basically doing that thing with Control Alt Delete does, where he just has a drop down of every different mouth, you know.
Yeah, so everything basically looks like Space Ghost.
Yeah, yeah. So, but it doesn't really matter because nobody's watching The Simpsons anymore. So
no,
it is. I will say this: I feel it's interesting that boomers continue to look at The Simpsons or watch them. So I guess I'm contradicting myself, and they tell me, oh yeah, they're just as great as they've always been. I'm like,
you weren't paying attention.
Yeah, I'm always very skeptical of that, because, you know, every boomer I know, well, also boomers have, like, I don't know, every boomer I know, their taste in media is interesting, because I feel like I feel like they're still enamored with the fact that things are moving on a screen. You know, like,
they still enamored with the fact that Mickey Mouse can spit.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, you know, like a lot of the boomers I know who are like, oh my God, I loved Howdy Doody so much when I was a kid. Yeah, okay. It's a puppet show. I mean, I guess you're watching a puppet show on TV. I mean, I feel like that kind of, like, is less interesting than watching a puppet show in real life, but, you know, But, you know,
well, I mean, I can't point fingers because I still watch Mystery Science Theater.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's different because I like it. I'm just a hypocrite, basically. But
you know, Mystery Science Theater was, you know, very carefully written by really funny people, and Howdy Doody was largely improvised, I think.
Yeah, I mean, also it's different audiences, because Howdy Doody is literally for children, and Miss Giant's Theater was, you know, for sophisticated and intelligent adults like us.
Yes.
Do you have the Colossal guide, episode guide?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so, yeah, I've got it here, too.
That book is awesome, yeah.
It is so good. It's so funny, because I just realized the other day that, like, man, that book's out of print, isn't it?
It's been out of print for a long time,
That's weird, because since Mystery Science Theater is such an important thing for me in, you know, my formative years, that, like, the idea that, like, it was allowed, the book was allowed to go out of print is bizarre. It's like, how can that be? Surely surely people are still circulating the tapes enough that there would be a demand, but I guess not.
Yeah, that's like if they let Something Under the Bread is Drooling go out of print.
Oh, yeah, that's still in print, isn't it?
It absolutely is, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's got
never been out of print, yeah.
Yeah, but, yeah, actually, you know, now I think about it, a lot of these, I've got, like, about 50 Far Side collections here, and I just realized those are probably all out of print at this point, you know?
Yeah, now if you want the Far Side collection, you have to get, like, that $300 three tomes of every single Far Side.
Man, wow. I guess, you know, when I was like, you know, when I was 13, I bought all the comic collections. So I've just got a whole shelf here. Yep. And it's like, boy, and then they were in my mom's storage for about, like, you know, 20 years. And then she gave them to me, and I was like, yeah, I don't need most of these. So most of them went to the thrift shop or the used bookstore. And now I'm realizing, well, that was pretty stupid, because there's probably some of these, like, My parents are the sort of people who, like, everything that's over 10 years old is, they think, a collector's item, you know? Because they don't understand how supply and demand works. Because they're all like, oh, you know, they bought me a Beanie Baby once for my birthday a few years ago. Uh-huh. And they were like, this Beanie Baby is worth a lot of money because it's being sold on eBay for over $1,000. And I was like, okay, but is anyone bidding on it? No.
Yeah, you can't just turn it in for money. It's not like, you know, it's not like exchanging your money for gold at the bank.
Yeah, that's the thing that got me. It was so weird because I was like, you are adults. Surely you understand this. But they also, like, one time they got me, like, you know, a little gold book, Tawny Scrawny Lion. You know,
this one has never been out of print. That's not a collector's item.
Exactly. It was like they were like, oh, you know, this is a book you had when you were a kid. It's probably worth a lot of money. And I was like, yeah, this book is in print. This is the only way this would be worth money is if this was like a signed 1940 copy. And it's not. It's literally just been printed this year. So I love them, but there's certain things they don't understand about, you know, how these things work. But anyway, my point is I'm doing the thing now where I'm like my parents, I believe anything old must inherently have value, but a lot of these Far Side collections, there may actually be someone out there who wants them. So I probably was very stupid in just getting rid of most of them. I still have about I still have a good number of them here. But I don't know why I have some of these. I don't even know. Why do I have an Over the Hedge collection?
What? Over the Hedge?
Yeah.
Wow. To remind us that we need to watch the movie, I guess.
Oh, that's right. That was a movie.
Why was that a movie? What a choice.
Yeah.
Why that and not Wizard of Id?
Yeah, that was definitely a choice. but anyway, Dragon Half.
Dragon Half. Okay, part two is, you know, more funny gags, but it has a specific theme because it's all about how Mink and her friends are trying to buy a real ticket to see Dick Saucer, and they do so by entering what's called the Brutal Killer Martial Arts Tournament. So, you know, this is what they do in most manga when they run out of ideas. They just have a tournament.
Dragon Ball Z.
Yep. Dragon Half Z. And so we have 8 competitors in this tournament. Oh, and what about this little Jewish Cyclops guy? I was not expecting him to have that voice.
Oh, yeah. The guy who's like, I guess he's the Barker who she's trying to get into the contest. And he's like, yeah, you got to fight this demon to prove that you're good enough.
Fight this Minotaurus. Are you ready? 1, 2, 3. Oi, this way, please.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, she lands him in a. She lands this monster in a second. He's like, "Oh, okay, this way to your dressing room, ma'am."
Yep. And then, yeah, this is very dragon. Dragon Ball Z, which is an entire anime that is nothing but tournaments.
Nothing but tournaments. Yeah, except for when it's, you know, and if you haven't watched Dragon Ball Z, imagine if wrestling took place all over the world and. And it was just about rolling out, I'm an even stronger wrestler than you. No, you're not. Oh, yeah, well, I'm an even stronger wrestler than him. No, you're not. Oh, you're right. Let's be friends.
Yeah. It's like, what's the power level? It is over 9,000. Over 9,000. Yes. A great meme because it pretty much encapsulates the entire series. I might have mentioned that when I was in high school, Dragon Ball Z was huge. That was around the time of 1993 or so. You know, I remember that, like, all the kids in my class were watching it, and I was like, I should watch it so I have something to talk around the water cooler about. And I watched, like, 3 episodes and was like, I can't do this. I just can't. It's nothing but just these guys punching each other and being like, my power level is higher. No, my power level is higher. Oh, God, here we go.
I think it was a lot more fun when it was before the Z was added, when it was simply Dragon Ball and it was more about adventuring than fighting.
Yeah, that was when they were flying around on the little cloud and stuff, I think.
Yeah. Did he stop doing that? I guess he just rockets around like Superman now.
Oh, maybe. Honestly, it's been a long time since I've
I don't think he uses the pole anymore, so yeah.
Oh, okay. I mostly remember that, like, there is there's Goku, there's the bald kid, and there's the, like, the girl, the hot girl that, like, yeah, everyone draws the porn of.
Probably Bulma.
Yeah, I think that sounds right.
Yes, which you might not know is a Japanese mangling of bloomers. Her whole family is named after underwear, which is why she has a son named Trunks and a daughter named Pan, which is short for panties.
Oh, okay, sure. yes. Why not? I guess that's amusing.
Yes. Did you know that there is a villain whose name is Boo?
No. What's his deal?
Okay. Well, what's thing about, I'm bringing it up because, it's sort of weird that his name is Boo. And then you find out that he was created by two evil wizards named Bibbidi and Bobbidi.
Oh man. Oh.
If you speak any English, it gets phenomenally weirder in this comic.
Well, you know, references.
Yes. So yeah, Mink enters the tournament and she is surprised to find that Saucer himself is competing. And so, like, you know, what does he want tickets to see himself for? But
it is very funny there's a whole thing where Rosario has a plan that he's going to give a laxative to Mink.
To Mink, yeah.
But,
and says, here, take this energy drink. This will help you. And Mink instead runs off with it and says, Dick Saucer, this is a gift for you. Please do well in the tournament.
Yeah. Oh, I do like when Luffy is all like, don't drink it. It's probably a laxative. And Rosario's immediately like, how the hell did you know? And Mink takes it anyway. And then, like, I think is Rosario actually, like, dressed up like the evil witch from Snow White in this scene?
Yeah, not very well, but yeah.
No, but you know, again, there's a lot of the visuals do a lot in this show. They're carrying a lot here, but yeah.
Yeah, so. I really like how when Dick Saucer takes the bottle, he flips it in the air and catches it before walking away. He's like, oh man, how do you not fuck that? He is hot.
he's just so cool. But yeah. But yeah, he drinks the things. Of course, he is he gets the shit.
Seized with terrible diarrhea in the middle of the battle, which means that the big tiger striped guy that he's been put against doesn't even have to fight him. He just puts a sticker with the king's face on his forehead, and that's how you win in this.
Yeah, it is great because Dick Saucer is like, I'm just gonna sing to maintain composure. So he starts singing, and the guy just comes and puts the sticker on his head. Yeah. And that's the end.
Yeah, right. Is going, all right, the brown devil is running away.
And that's pretty much the end of that match. So Dick Saucer is eliminated in the first round.
So then we have Mink's rematch against Damaramu, who has been completely rebuilt. Now he has the giant robot body.
Yeah, he's a cyborg now, and even brought back his bird. So the bird returns as well as a cyborg.
Except that it was big enough to ride before, and now it's the size of a pigeon.
Oh yeah, that's another gag because they show it like coming down, and everyone is like, "Oh my god!" And then it turns out it's very, very small. So
oh my god, here comes a flying mechanical bird, but it's so small. Yeah, Blacksmith Tony did a shitty job on that one.
I do like that Blacksmith Tony is apparently some sort of...
Who is Blacksmith Tony?
some mechanical genius, apparently.
Yeah, I guess he's the equivalent of Sid for Dragon Half.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So let's see, what else? I guess the big thing is then... I think.
Vina... Oh yes. Then we have Vina. Vina has to fight this character that we've never seen before, who is this weird little kind of gremlin-y hedgehoggy person named Doug Finn, and Doug Finn is an incredibly powerful sorcerer, but he's still just a kid, so she lures him into danger with cookies.
Oh, yeah, I like the bit where he's acting like they should know who he is, and then he watches the video of Dragonhaft to realizes that his scenes were cut out of the first episode.
Yes. He is, in fact, one of the main villains of the comic, but they didn't have time to establish him, so just here he is.
Yeah. They're, it's very much like Spaceballs, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's probably the best joke in the whole series, the whole two episodes, now that I think about it.
Yeah.
I think, I can't remember now if she wins, right?
Yeah, she does win eventually, but Doug Finn is just, is totally kicking her shit with an endless volley of fireballs. But then he makes the mistake of breaking her bra, and she ends up flashing the audience for just a second. And as he's going, "Hey, ha, I saw someone's goodies, ha, ha, ha." And the announcer is like, "I hope he doesn't stop there." Now Mink is filled with burning rage because she was determined that Dick Saucer would be the first one to see her breasts. And of course, Dick is in the bathroom, so he missed it.
Yeah. Oh, we get it. We do get a shot of him on the toilet, though.
Yes. So, yeah, now she is filled with righteous rage, and her dragon power overrides Doug Finn, and she punches him and knocks him into the lava. Did we mention there's lava? There's lava.
That's right. Yeah, because Dormammu is in there, too.
Yep. And although she does defeat him, her friends wave their arms in the air and yay, "Banzai, Mink! You did it! You did it! Banzai!" And she does a banzai, too, and tits!
Now, see, this is what you call fan service. And yes. Dragonhaft actually delivers it, unlike fucking Evangelion, which just says, "Oh, I'm going to give you some fan service. Going to be some fan service. Ooh, any day now."
Any day now.
Yeah. So anyway, again, Dragonhaft, far superior. 10 out of 10, would recommend.
Yeah. So is this your favorite anime now? Really?
Yeah, I'd say so. I haven't seen any other anime that's any good, so... I'd say this one's a really good one. I enjoyed it a lot, and I'm not a big anime guy. I mean, there's some good ones, you know. I joke a lot, but you know, they're fine. It's fine. If you like anime, it's fine. But yeah, this is, I'd say, it's definitely up there. I'd say it's up there with like Samurai Pizza Cats and, Record of Lodoss War.
Oh. You're a fan of Record of Lodoss War? I did not know that.
Well, it's got a warm... I have a warm place in my heart for it, because I saw it at a particular time in my life. You know, if I watch it again now, I'd probably be like, "Oh, this is shit." But, you know. Yeah.
Well, I'm feeling very grateful that you know, I saw Dragonhaft when I was 16, and it was immediately my favorite anime, and I was a little worried that it wouldn't hold up so much later, but no, it's still really good.
Yeah. This one is a lot of fun, so worth checking out. Have you ever read the manga? So it sounds like?
No, I know they did finally release the whole thing in English, so I do need to sit down with it and really read it. Our mutual friend Steph Cherrywell has read it, and I remember Steph saying they were startled when they actually saw the anime how much time the characters spend in super deformed mode. So I guess there's a little less of wacky character designs in the manga, but that doesn't seem like a reason to avoid it.
Oh, that's interesting. I guess that's true, because like if you're in a static medium, you can't really do a lot of the quick flashing gags that you could do in animation. So maybe they just
I feel like they were like, "We can only do two, so really let's really play up the fact that this is animated."
Yeah.
So
they took advantage of the medium. So good for them.
Dragonhaft recommended.
Yeah.
You know, I wish we got the other half.
Yeah. Check it out. So we finally found a good anime.
Yes, and now we don't have to look at any more. Oh, wait, there's one more, maybe two, depending how many more months we have left in July.
Well, I guess, well, next time you'll see, so.
I'll ever regret this.